Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, we share ideas and strategies. I tell stories about things that work, but also my big epic fails that I've made along the way. And all because I truly believe that teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. And one of the topics we get into a lot is this idea of what do students need in a changing world? How do we help them become more adaptable? And part of that is this idea of student voice and choice, or student ownership, or student empowerment, whatever we want to call it. And so that's what today's podcast episode is going to be about. How do we empower students from day one? But before we get started, I also want to say really quickly a shout out. Thank you to everyone who has bought my book, The Depth Advantage. It's been doing really well. I really appreciate all the feedback I've gotten on it, the reviews I've gotten. So thank you so much for checking that book out. And if you haven't gotten your free course, there's the Empowered in a Year course for anyone who buys the book. So go check that out, fill out the little form connected to it, and you can access that course if you have bought the book. Or you could email me directly at john@spencereducation.com. So without further ado, let's dive into this week's podcast episode. When AJ Giuliani and I co-wrote the book Empower, we focused on the ways that students could own the learning process. It's the core idea of shifting from something that's totally teacher-led toward something a little more student-centered. We often talk about what it means to move from compliance to engagement, but this is the idea of moving a step further in student agency toward student ownership, student empowerment. If we want students to be creative, self-directed learners, we need to move into this space of empowerment. And again, you can picture this as a continuum of teacher-centered on one hand, student-centered on the other hand. So we go compliance, I'm doing it because I have to. Engagement, I'm doing it because I want to. Empowerment, I'm doing it from a sense of buy-in. A little nuance here. All three approaches are necessary. In reading, you might need a compliance-driven approach when it comes to things like phonics and blending. You might move to engagement when it comes to doing a really cool whole class read aloud, or finding an interesting short story for them to read or article for them to read that they would never have found on their own. But then during silent choice-driven reading, students are empowered to read whatever they want to read. So that's the core idea. And when we first wrote the book, I focused on the pedagogical aspects of voice and choice. It was all about asking themselves, you know, what are we doing for students that they could be doing for themselves? And as I think about this, I've really grown to realize that it's not just about empowering them academically or empowering them in their learning. It's also building an empowered community. So I want to share six different ways that we can empower students to own the classroom community. And I want to point out that for each one of these, if you go to spencereducation.com, you'll find this particular podcast episode. For each one of these, I have included a more detailed set of instructions than what you hear on the podcast episode. And there's also free downloads with templates and things like that that you can check out as well. So just a heads up, if you want to learn more, it is available. But let's dive into these six ways to empower students to own more of the classroom community. All right, number one is empower students to choose the class norms. Why is everyone cutting in line? I asked in frustration. What line? Our guide asked. The line, the queue, that people are just rushing forward and cutting, I said to the guide. Yeah, well, this is Yuying City, not Portland, he reminded me. Our norms are different here. In this moment, I was enraged over the sense that everyone around me was acting unjustly. And I had failed to even ask, is a line the best way to organize a group of people? Coming from the US, I hadn't considered the ways that groups might self-manage in a place like China. Our guide explained the nuanced difference. It's not that queues aren't normal here. They are, but we let the elderly move forward. It's a sign of respect. I shrunk back a little bit in embarrassment as the cliche ugly American popped into my mind. I had internalized a very US and I would say UK, Anglo, whatever you want to say, Western norm, and hadn't even considered how this norm had shaped my sense of right and wrong. Norms are powerful, unspoken rules that guide entire communities. They exist at a national level, but also in subcultures. So if I think about this, the same thing is true in the classroom. We need norms. Our classroom norms shape the sense of who we are as a community, but each group is different and the norms are likely to change from year to year because the community is different from year to year. For this reason, it can help to negotiate norms together as a community. Instead of simply imposing a bunch of rules from above, we can ask students to reflect on some guiding questions like, what does respectful communication look like? What does it mean to respect the physical equipment and materials? What does it look like to be prepared? How do you want to be treated and how do you want to treat others? What kind of freedoms do you want? And how can we respect the freedom of others? So you get the idea. This by no means is an exhaustive list of norms, but we can start with those sets of norms or guiding questions, I should say, and then put together categories. And these could be norms for collaboration, personal work ethic norms, academic integrity norms, you get the idea. And then in the process, you might want to make sure that the norms fit some criteria. So positive phrasing, instead of saying do not do blank, phrase it as do this, right? Show up on time, not don't forget your pencil. Clear and concise, concrete and visual, right? We want them to be able to see what it looks like. And polite, you know, being sure to use words like please to signal respect for your students. So that's number one. We can empower them to choose the norms. We can also do number two, which is to define a set of collective values. Now, I wouldn't do this for every grade level or even for every class, but there is something about saying, what do we agree on? What are the values that we hold as a community? So it might start with personal reflection where you ask questions like, what do you care the most about in life? What kind of person do you want to be? What are some qualities you find in a friend? And then they discuss it with a partner. They do some silent writing. We do a debrief. And then together we come up with values, and then a set of actions that demonstrate these values. So do we value hard work? Well, what does that look like? Do we value honesty? What does that look like? You get the idea. The third one is to empower students to choose classroom jobs. I think it's really interesting how often young students get a chance to do classroom jobs. And then as students get older, they don't do classroom jobs as often. Here's what I mean. I'm going to share a brief story about a mistake I made and what I learned. Mr. Spencer, your date is always wrong on the board, a student complained. I'm sorry, I forget to fix that sometimes, I admitted. And your handwriting is ugly, another student said. I know, I admitted. When I was a kid, I ignored spelling and handwriting because I thought it would never matter in an era of computers. I really thought that someday we would just have computers that would fix our spelling and our bad handwriting. And then you know what? I ended up in the only job around where handwriting and spelling matters. Why don't you have me do it? The student asked. I used to fill out the whiteboard for my fourth grade teacher every morning. Another student chimed in. Why don't we have classroom jobs? We used to have classroom jobs in elementary school and I was a timekeeper. I still remember that. And in this moment, I realized that although I wanted to empower my students, I had failed to empower them to run the classroom systems. It's easy to miss just how many tiny tasks it takes to keep a classroom moving. Papers to be passed out, chairs need to be stacked, the floor is somehow covered in pencil shavings, and you get the idea, lots of different stuff. And so what we can do is empower them to do classroom jobs. The process requires some upfront investment and time, but the whole thing is that initial investment leads to big savings in time later. And you can even create job descriptions, you can have students filling out applications, and you can run all of that using AI tools, and it'll save you time. The fourth idea is to empower students to choose the rituals, or what some people would call the procedures. And there's a lot of ways we can do this, but I think it's important to recognize that when procedures are unclear, it creates behavior challenges. Sometimes kids misbehave because they're violating norms. Often they're just failing to do the right thing because they don't know what the procedure is. They don't know what the ritual is. And those rituals create a sense of cohesion in a classroom, because the more we do that and the more we form group habits together, the more cohesive it becomes, because we all share these rituals that essentially join us together. So what does it look like to empower students to own the procedures? Well, one of the best ways that I found is something called a procedure grid. What you do is you have students ask questions, you put them into sticky notes, you organize them into categories, you look at the most common questions, and then together you negotiate the class procedures or rituals. So the way I have it laid out on my website is question, and then a bunch of different questions, and then categories of grouping. So individual, partner, small group, and whole group or whole class. And it might be a question like, who can I talk to? Or can I throw something away? And can I throw something away individually would be yes, one at a time. Partner, can I throw something away? I might say, actually, no, because I need you to stick with your partner. It's actually important to me that you don't get up and throw things away. But then in a small group, you know what? Your group might miss you a little bit, but someone else can step in. So go ahead and throw something away. And then in whole class, for me, I always say it's a distraction. I know some people disagree. I don't love having kids get up and move when I'm teaching. Other teachers, again, could be totally fine with that. So again, what we're focusing on is this idea of empowering students to come up with the class rituals or procedures together, and then organizing it into this procedure or ritual grid. And I like to run it almost as a republic. So I'm the president. I get to veto everything. I get final say. I get to have some executive orders when necessary. But really, as much as possible, I want students to decide their answers to each question. You know, who can I talk to? Can I sharpen a pencil? Turning things in, all of those. And it's a chance to practice our procedures as we come up with them as well, which is kind of fun. So again, that's the notion of empowering students to come up with the rituals. The fifth idea is to empower students to own the classroom space. I once did an activity where I asked my students to fill out a heat map of who owns the classroom space. Any space that belonged to the teacher, me, was red. Any space that we shared together was purple. Any space that was an individual's sole location was, or ownership, was blue. I then flipped through these maps and I noticed trends. First, despite changing the grouping throughout the day, every kid had some spot that was their space. And I recognized that that was actually really important. They needed an anchor space that was just theirs, their own desk. Second, I noticed that there were large swaths of the classroom that students thought that those spaces just belonged to me as a teacher, and they didn't belong to everyone. Both whiteboards, for example, and the space in front of them, the bookshelves and the space in front of that, the supply cabinet, the walls, those were all labeled in red. So I began to ask, what does it mean to own more of the space? And there's a lot of things to do, you know, doing graffiti board activities on the whiteboard, letting them move furniture with permission and having wheels on the furniture to make it more adaptable. Having spaces where students can decorate the classroom walls, having them do the bulletin boards, finding activities that allow students to use more of the space in front of the whiteboards, having a standing center that also functions as a bookcase. All of those are examples of letting students make more decisions about the physical classroom space. And then finally, empower students to come up with some of the instructional ideas or lessons or projects. And the best way to do this is with a student leadership team. Here's how it works. Part one, there's a check-in. Part two, they get feedback. It can be open feedback on what's going well, open feedback on what could be improved. You could have more specific feedback if you prefer. And then they do decision making. And in this phase, they might generate ideas, narrow things down, plan stuff together. And then at the very end, there are closures and next steps. And what I love about this is when we empower them to own the instructional elements, you end up with really great ideas and you are still the expert as the teacher, but you're listening to your students and they feel listened to and they feel valued. Again, as we move into the school year, I encourage you to think about specific ways that students can own more of the classroom community, that there can be more buy-in so that students are empowered together as a group. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on Apple Podcast or on Spotify, Amazon, wherever you listen to it? And also don't forget to subscribe. And last thing is go check out spencereducation.com. Click on the newsletter and you'll get updates with my latest articles, podcast episodes, and free resources. Finally, I just want to say, let people know about this podcast. That would be awesome. And subscribe to it if you have not done that. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day. And go out and make something awesome.